This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
America tonight, as we're coming up on another Thanksgiving, what are you thankful for? Start thinking about it if you haven't already. You know, it's a good time to keep one of those daily gratitude journals. You can go back and look. It's always neat to track that kind of stuff, right? Unless you're a politician. It is America Tonight, and I am Kate Delaney. So here we are, and we start with a couple of things, including the end of Dale Jr. Goodbye to NASCAR. Pretty teary-eyed. And in the NASCAR world, the Earnhardt family, of course, is royalty. That's why I bring it up right at the top. Speaking of royalty in country music, they've lost a legend, Mel Tillis. He would be the equivalent there as well. In the meantime, wow, Zimbabwe, lots and lots of protests over what's going on in Zimbabwe, and Robert Mugabe defying all of the cries that he should resign. He addressed the nation on Sunday. We're going to tell you about what happened there. But closer to home, what is the big argument politically? Because, of course, coming into the week, there's always the talking heads on the Sunday night show, the Sunday morning shows, rather, and that's what I like to call it. It's the Sunday swirl. And in the Sunday swirl, what really was at work? A couple of things. Taxes still hanging in the balance, and tax plans heavily discussed, but that's not the only thing. Besides taxes, there's all of this avalanche of what's going to happen with Roy Moore. And you had the White House saying that the president has serious concerns about Moore, but that Alabama should decide the judge's really fate against the Democrat Doug Jones, a former prosecutor. I agree. I mean, the bottom line is it is up to Alabama to decide what they want to do, not the rest of the nation. There is massive political polling on this and public thoughts and polls on this too. You know, would you elect him in the and whatnot, especially in this current climate? But it doesn't matter what people nationally think. It matters what the people of Alabama think, and that is the bottom line. But I don't think these stories are going to stop. I think the stories are absolutely going to continue. Besides what's going on with Moore, and I mentioned this, taxes, taxes, taxes. You had Senator Cotton talking about taxes of a different sort, saying the insurance mandate is a tax on the poor and has to go now, because this is part of what the back and forth was, as I mentioned, on the swirl. That's what I call it. So Senator Tom Cotton, the Republican from Arkansas, says he supports the Senate's plan to repeal the individual health care mandate. We're all aware of that, right? If you get your own health insurance, and is pushing for Congress to return to health care after taxes, because he says we need to solve all the problems that Obamacare made worse in our health care system. He was on CBS's show called Face the Nation, of course, and he said, I hope next year that we return to health care, but right now I'm focused on this tax bill. And, of course, talking about the whole mandate and whether or not it's going to have an impact on anyone who wants to get health insurance under Obamacare's individual exchanges or under the Medicaid expansion and under their employer's plan. So that's where that sits. There's been tons of criticism in lots of directions over this, and Cotton was one of those guys that is rebuking the criticisms of the individual mandate repeal in the Senate, because he says it's misguided politics. It doesn't impact anyone's health care. It just removes a tax that was slapped on the poor. So people who couldn't even afford what they were doing were getting slammed with the possibility of a tax on top of it to add insult to injury. And we'll see where that all ends up. And then, of course, infrastructure. This is the other huge piece of the puzzle for this president, who talked about infrastructure falling down around us and the need to bolster our infrastructure and to streamline what's going on. But there's a lot of problems to that, and there's a lot of money problems to that, for sure, in trying to make that happen, because it's the business of politicians to get in the way, right? And all the red tape is outrageous. You could probably wrap it around the United States 25 times. And what are the jurisdictions? In fact, there was a huge in-depth piece Sunday in the New York Times talking about how do you do that? What do you do with infrastructure? And I think it was dead on. The agencies that don't agree, some of the things that I mentioned. The president had the executive order back in August to help streamline infrastructure plans. But they've had to put it in the background, in the back burner, on the back burner, because of the major hurricane relief packages, because of Obamacare repeal and replace blowing up, because of the budget, because of tax reform. It's no longer number one on the list, number two on the list, three, four, or five, really. It's further down the chain, even though it was heavily discussed on the trail and heading into the White House. It hasn't gone in the direction the president hoped, but because some of the money woes, you can see how it's absolutely not going to be something that's going to be tackled for a while. Speaking of not tackling something for a while, as I jam in a lot of thoughts here at the top of the show, and I'm going to throw this one out too. I talked about the XL pipeline a ton. For the last 4 years, I've had people on in all directions on this. Now what's interesting is Nebraska finally is ready to do something. Their regulators there are set to decide Monday whether to approve or deny an in-state route for the planned pipeline. It's the last hurdle facing the project, which is being done by TransCanada Corporation. The Nebraska Public Service Commission's ruling is on the Nebraska route, like I said, that they propose to complete for the $8 billion, 1,179-mile pipeline that would take the oil from Alberta, Canada, to the Texas Gulf Coast refineries. It would cross a lot of states, Montana, South Dakota, most of Nebraska, to Steel City, Nebraska. And a vote in favor of the proposed route through Nebraska would certainly help the project, which has been massively delayed. It was rejected by Obama back in 2015 because they were talking about carbon pollution then. And then Trump revived it in March, approving a permit. So then the wheels started to turn again. But environmental activists and some landowners have definitely stood in the middle of this for more than a decade. So what's interesting here is, what will they say? What will happen out of this Nebraska Public Service Commission? And they're really forbidden by law from factoring pipeline safety or the risk of spills into the decision, because that's on the feds, so they won't take that into account. That won't be part of this. It is either yes or no on this preferred route. Which direction will they go? Stay with us. We're hitting the mailbag coming up around the bend on ATN.
It's about time something new came along for better selling and buying online. And I found it.
What now, Marge?
It's buysellmakeoffer.com.
Never heard of it.
It's a brand new company. That's why you've never heard of it. It's the newest and best way to sell any products online. I did all the research.
Sell my car?
Yes.
Our home?
Yep.
My golf bag?
Your golf clubs. All of them.
How about your purse collection hoard?
Hey, now.
You said any product.
Right. I did. We get 30 days free.
Really?
Packages starting from only $9.95. And buysellmakeoffer.com will never charge item fees, ever. Never. And this is cool. Listen to this. You can even use Skype or video to show your items.
That's cool.
Yes. All we have to do is go to the website, sign up, and then load our stuff to sell. I love this site.
BuySellMakeOffer.com.
BuySellMakeOffer.com. You got it?
BuySellMakeOffer.com.
BuySellMakeOffer.com. Better selling, better buying.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
Are you retired or facing retirement and you're afraid your income is going to be less than you'd like? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and I want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current schedule, creating extra income that will last for years to come by joining Dr. Wallach's Crusades, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com, or call 866-257-3105 for a recorded message.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play around. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter. In other words, hold my hand.
Her dulcet tones. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. So start thinking about that, what you're thankful for. I'm thankful for all of you because I keep saying this over the years. It's incredible how much email that I receive. If this were a post office, nobody else could really receive any mail because it would be full of all of the thoughts that you're sending me. And it's kind of all over the place this time around, so I thought it would be fun to jump on the mailbag right away. So on that note, let's head to the mailbag.
Let's dig in the mailbag.
Let's definitely do that. All right, this one is from Jay, who says, Kate, I have to mention a sports thing here. I just happened to notice because this game wrapped up a while ago. I don't know if you'll read this or not, but yay on your Eagles. They beat up those Dallas Cowboys, and so now they are 9-1. I'm not necessarily a huge Eagles fan, but I like the Eagles because you like the Eagles, and I like that nail the score thing that you do, and I'm going to call in next week when you nail the score. So speaking of nail the score, that will come up on our next show in the last segment of hour one. So the next show we're going to do an early version of Nail the Score because, of course, Thanksgiving you have games, etc., and then people are heading off for Thanksgiving, and I hope all of you are going to be with friends, family, etc., wherever it is. Or, hey, even if you're by yourself, hopefully you're going to get some of the great Thanksgiving treats that so many will be eating, of course, and across the country, whatever it is, if it's pumpkin pie for you or if it's turkey or if it's mashed potatoes, whatever it might be. And speaking of that, we go to this one from Mac, who says, Kate, how many turkeys do you think are cooked on Thanksgiving Day? How many turkeys are cooked on Thanksgiving Day? That is such a broad question that I have no clue. I mean, I remember I had a stat one time about this that we were giving away, this is a long time ago, we were giving away coupons for turkeys, and Butterball had all kinds of statistics on Thanksgiving Day turkeys, and it was such a, I mean, it's such a cultural tradition, etc. It was such a high, a crazy high number. I mean, you have to go back, what, to the 1600s for the Pilgrims and the first celebration of it, and some of what they ate, we still, you know, pumpkin and berries and all that stuff shows up on a lot of tables, and of course now it's turned into other things, hot rolls and mince pies and, you know, you name it. But the actual amount of turkey sold, they say that American turkey growers raise 270 million plus turkeys that would be processed into 5 billion pounds of turkey meat. And then if you were to look at the value of that meat, it'd be like something like $8 billion. Oh my gosh. Isn't that crazy? I mean, and who knows the exact amount? Of course, how would we ever know that? We wouldn't know that. I think the most difficult, or I shouldn't say difficult, I think the most interesting thing about turkeys is how people do them. Do they fry them? Do they do them the traditional way? Do they put the stuffing inside? Do they do that separately? There are certain family traditions, I think, that carry over. So it depends on what your family, you know, it depends on what your family does. So that's a good question, and there is not a definite answer to it, but you heard my answer as to what the estimated kind of guess is, I think, on that. All right, let's move to another one. This one is from Jerome, who's listening to us in the great state of Florida. Woohoo! And says, Miss Kate, I'm so frustrated by the healthcare system. Obamacare was crap. What they're talking about is crap. Isn't there another way around this? Well, I go back to decades and decades ago when they were first started to work on this. If it had been worked out in the 70s, let's face it, it probably would be a much better system. And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. It's complicated. Doesn't cover anything. Because you have pre-existing conditions now, that's not going to matter. But is it fair to throw an individual mandate out there, especially when half the time you're not going to be able to service most of these people anyway? It seems so backwards to me. And you had so many doctors that bailed in the first place because they couldn't stand to have to try to deal with all of the nonsense, the fallout, etc. Now the premiums are sky high. Oh, man. Really? So can you afford it is the other question. You know, that's the other question. And we'll see if they take that individual mandate, if that goes away, if the fine goes away or not. Because that used to be, this is what they would have in place so it would encourage people to get the health insurance because it wouldn't be worth it for them to bail on it. All right, here's another one from The Axe who says, Kate, David Cassidy in critical condition. I think I love you. How many times do you hear that on the radio when you listen to the 70s music? I'm a Sirius XM listener and they have a specific channel for it. Oh, it makes me so, so sad. David Cassidy was a part of my childhood. Yeah, you know, he was the heartthrob in the Partridge Family, and it is true. He's being treated at a Fort Lauderdale hospital, and he's in the intensive care unit. He has a breathing tube. He is conscious, they say, and family and friends are there. They're just taking it day by day. They don't know what caused his problems. He has organ failure. So at 67, he, you know, earlier this year they were saying he was battling dementia. Wow. Oh, he was so popular in the 70s. And even after the 70s, he had spikes in popularity. But You know, he did say he had this dementia thing, and he said dementia, when he was asked about it, that dementia ran in his family, and it affected both his grandfather and his mother. And he said he was in denial, but he knew it was something that would probably be coming, and that's very sad. Wow, David Cassidy. I missed that interview thing, so I had no clue. All right, here's Jan chiming in with this, saying, Kate, how many people do you think actually legitimately have off on Thanksgiving, and how many are working? Well, if I could look at my crystal ball and give you numbers, I would tell you exactly. If you're traveling somewhere and you're on the road, I guarantee it's going to be crowded. And if you're working, you're not alone, because now so many places are up and going on Thanksgiving. You know, remember it was like everything was closed on Thanksgiving, on New Year's, on Christmas. But now a lot of places stay open, or they start to deal with people because they get a jump on Black Friday, so they have all kinds of specials, and then people are running around doing that, and then all the people that work there, of course, are coming in because somebody has to wait on the people, right? So more people work on Thanksgiving, I think, than back in the olden days. You know, back when I was a little kid, I mean, like I said, to me it seemed like everything was a ghost town. I don't remember hardly anything being opened. So the answer to that question is that, sadly. I mean, very sad if you think about it, right? All right, how about this? With this last one, this one is from Bruce, who says, Kate, what do you think about Mugabe and the fact that he won't resign? Yeah, he's the only leader Zimbabwe has had since it became independent in 1980, but he's just gathered a lot of strength, and he vowed he wasn't going anywhere in this address on over the weekend, and he's been stripped of his power and expelled from his party. So I don't know, where is he going to go if they stripped him from everything? I don't know. Where could he possibly go if they're saying, well, you don't exist as far as the realm of politics is concerned here? And the answer is, there's nowhere for him to go. I mean, if they voted him out, they voted him out, and that's part of the acceptance thing, I suppose. But think about how long he's been in that position. He doesn't know anything else. Back in a flash here on ATN.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, listeners, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-774-3149 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-774-3149. Again, that's 800-774-3149.
Google has all but banned the movie series What Would Muhammad Do? It's a brilliant film on the true history and goals of Islam. This is the film Trump's enemies and holdouts from the Obama administration are terrified you will see. Pro-Islamic groups working with Google and other multi-billion dollar corporations have vowed to suppress the distribution of What Would Muhammad Do? When you see it, you'll understand why. Get your copy while you still can. Order the 4-DVD collection today for $39.95 plus shipping and handling. Or go online and download the entire movie series for just $19.95. But wait, for those who order in the next 30 minutes, we'll throw in a 9-part series on the Muslim Brotherhood absolutely free. Go to www.mdfilm.com or call 304-289-3700 now. That's www.mdfilm.com or call 304-289-3700 now.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. 800-535-7789. 800-535-7789. 800-535-7789. That's 800-535-7789.
Welcome to Forbes Books at Bedtime with Kate Delaney and Greg Stebbin.
Really thrilled about our next guest coming up. Anna Liotta is with us. She's in our virtual green room, as it were, as we like to say here on your nightly fix of Forbes. And what's really cool about Anna is she's one of 19 children, which is crazy insane. I can't even wrap my brain around that. Greg, you're not one of 19 children, right?
No, I'm one of 2 children, and that's twice as many as I would prefer, frankly.
Oh, that's interesting. That's like me, 1 and 2. Exactly. And she's an expert on generations and the differences between them and how do we bridge the gap. Think of meetings, think of companies, and she really is the go-to person. There's no question about it. So she's got a busy schedule, and we're really excited that she's able to spend some time with us. Anna, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Kate.
So since I set you up that way, I'm sure people always ask you this, and it's on your website, too. You have a photograph of your family, 19 children. So where are you in the lineup?
You know, I come in at the very end. I'm the youngest girl. So I'm the 18th child.
Wow.
And you know what, Greg, if you need a couple extras, I'm happy to have a couple of siblings. Because, you know, between my siblings, they also have 56 children, so I'm an auntie 56 times, and their kids already have 48. So my family life really was a petri dish of the generations. It was kind of an ongoing dissertation my whole life just to survive the generational dynamics.
So I could not be more different in my family background. I have one brother. I hope he's listening, because if this is news to him, he hasn't been paying attention. But he's like having 18 siblings. He's a handful. He's a lot of handfuls. And neither of us have kids. So my life experience is exactly the opposite of yours, which is... It's pretty staggering. I love the photo of you on your website in your mom's arms. There's little Anna, and all her brothers and sisters. You're all very cute and charming, and look where you are today. You're talking to us.
Exactly. And that's such a great example of generational dynamics in action, because in that picture is a GI generation dad, a traditionalist mom, many baby boomer brothers and sisters, and Gen Xer brothers and sisters, and now we add all the millennials in that are nieces and nephews, and then their kids are actually Gen Z, or what I call the global. So right there, you have the six generations colliding.
See, I think Apple created the panorama feature on the iPhone just for your family, because if you didn't have panorama, you couldn't get them all in.
It's so true. I remember one of the weddings we were at, the wedding photographer had scheduled like 45 minutes to take the family picture. And we're so used to getting everyone in and figuring it out and, you know, without even the panorama, that he turned around after, you know, getting the camera ready and boom, everybody was there. And he's like, I can get you all in one shot. We're like, yeah, we know how to get close. We get all swoosh.
He was disappointed because that was less shots that he could sell you. If he had to capture you in 10 shots, it was 10 times the revenue. So I'm really interested on it. You do a lot of speaking, obviously, about generations in general, but also about millennials.
Yes.
And everywhere I go, and I go to a lot of conferences for Forbes and for Forbes Books, everywhere I go, I hear people frustrated, upset, angry, clueless about how to work with millennials. I never hear millennials complaining about the older folks they work with. I hear older folks complaining about the millennials. What can we do about that?
Well, I have to say the millennials are complaining about the older folks. We're just not always listening. But let me tell you what we can do about that. Where my work over the last 20 years in generational research has brought me to is to understanding that each generation has a code. I call it their generational code. It's a little bit like an algorithm that's running in the background. And when you understand their generational code or the algorithm and the variables to it, it gives you a new perspective on how to address, to lead, to manage, to sell to work with the different generations. So let me give you a little example of what that code might sound like. What we know from knowledge studies is that about age 8, our brains start to make logic. If this, then that. And between the ages of 8 to 18, we're observing the world around us, the events, the leaders, the icons, and when there's an event and it's paired with an emotion, it creates an imprint. The higher the emotion, the deeper the imprint. So when we want to understand why do the millennials do what they do, why do they expect what they expect, or let's be honest, demand what they demands, right? What is shaping that? What's driving that? My perfect example of this, my bonus mom is in her 90s right now, and I call her bonus because my mom passed away when I was very young, and my dad remarried to her best friend who brought six children to us, the last six in the 19, and she grew up with some formative events of the Great Depression, World War II, and so a couple Christmases ago, we were making a lasagna for one of our family potlucks, because you can imagine, no one person can make enough food to feed all that, right? Everybody's got to pitch in a little bit, but we're making a lasagna for the potluck. And we cover it in tinfoil. We take it off to the dinner. At the end of the night, I was wiping down the now empty lasagna plate. And I looked over at my sweet bonus mom in her 90s. And what do you think she was doing with the tinfoil?
Cleaning it to reuse it.
She was. She was saving it. She was wiping it down, smoothing out the wrinkles, cleaning it for reuse. Because her formative events that shaped her algorithm or her generational code tell her that you need to conserve and keep everything. Now, today, she doesn't need to do that. She has plenty of resources, but she still has actions and reactions based off those formative experiences. So when it comes to our millennials, we need to understand what are their formative experiences that are shaping their choices. And once we understand that, all of a sudden they become a little less frustrating to us because we realize that they're not attempting to be demanding or what so many people love to say entitled, but they have been raised by baby boomer parents and Gen Xers who said, do what you love and the money will follow. You need to go in there and you need to be strong. You need to ask for what you want, speak up, stand up. And so they do. They arrive in the workplace and they are very excited because they want to make a difference. They want to have an impact. But they also come in with positive self-esteem that their parents worked really hard to make sure they had it. And so when you think about it, our traditionalists came into the workplace and they thought of themselves as laborers. They come through the Great Depression. Their parents had. They were just grateful to have a job. And so the loyalty of the two-way street in an organization was you work hard for the organization works hard, and they take care of you. Then come our baby boomers. And they had 80 million peers. So everything was a competition. So then they got on with the company. Loyalty was still two ways, but it was really about working up the corporate ladder, putting in 20 years so you could get ahead of your peers. So our baby boomers think of themselves as employees. They are moving up the ladder. They're working super hard, but they can't move because moving meant getting behind through their formative years. And so when you ask a baby boomer, what do? They say, I work for. So that employee generational DNA comes forward. Now, our Gen Xers came of age through the Great Recession of the 1980s, and so their baby boomer parents had bled company colors. They worked 80-hour work weeks like a badge of honor. They'd totally been dedicated. But in the middle of their formative years, in the recession of the 80s, they came home with a little slip of paper at the dinner table. What color was that pink? Oops, I just told you. Pink. It was a pink slip, right? And so our Gen Xers became free agents in their mentality. They get on with the company, they work super hard, but they know if something cataclysmic happens, they need to be ready with their resume fresh, their bullet points hot, and they need to be ready to scoop up their skill set and move on. Our millennials come along, and loyalty as a two-way street, long gone. They have never seen that as part of their DNA. They don't expect to stay with the company that they're currently at for their whole career trajectory. They're going to be in the workplace till they're 80. So they consider themselves to be talent. You ask them, what do? And they tell you what they're passionate about, what their talents are, what their gifts are. Now, our Gen Xers, you ask them what they do, and they say, I'm in. And they give you the industry. So when we're looking at these different dynamics, we need to understand what shaped those formative years when they were identifying with the world and how the things work. Now, the Gen Zs, what I call the globals, come along. And they will be influencers because they already have followings on Instagram and Pinterest and YouTube. And they know that their real power is the channel that people follow them on. And people pay a lot of money to them as influencers to get to their audience, to get to their network, their hyper network. And so all of these different generational codes make sense to each person in that generation because that was their formative year of imprints.
Boy, that is crazy. What an amazing timeline you gave us of what we're seeing now in companies. We're almost up against it, but from the millennial point of view and from a corporation, if I run a corporation and I'm at the C-level, and we're going to continue this with you in another segment, but how do I initially keep millennials engaged and then the globals?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing is you said the right word. Engaged, because they come into the workplace ready to contribute. And that looks like collaboration from day one, week one. Collaboration not only on what am I going to do right now, but where do I go from here? So they want to say, listen, I can find other job opportunities by jumping online, jumping on LinkedIn, jumping on Career Builder. They can find all of these different job opportunities. Why don't you let me know where I can go from here inside the organization so that I can map out a career path within the organization? Don't just say, well, you've only been here for 6 weeks or 6 months or expect me to stay till 6 years before we have the conversation. Engage me by asking about what are my personal goals and then helping me map out how I can get there from here from the very beginning. Even in the interview, they would like to know, what is your ecosystem within the organization to help me develop my talent, because I see myself as talent and I want to keep myself fresh, have learning experiences, and they're looking for those learning experiences inside your organization. One of the really great ways from the beginning is to have a mentoring program that's not just one way. It's not just down, but it's mentoring up as well. It's mentoring across and having people be able to really be collaboratively engaged in designing their experience.
Love that. Hang on, Anna. We're going to do another segment with you. This is so fascinating, Greg. So thanks so much for being on your nightly fix of Forbes, and we're going to catch up with you again on another night.
People search the internet for everything, including you. With a few clicks, information from your past can be quickly discovered. From business deals gone wrong, to misleading reviews, negative articles, and unflattering images. Studies show 78% of people search for someone online before doing business with them. Will they find the real you? With ReputationDefender.com, you can establish a positive internet presence. ReputationDefender.com pioneered the field with over a decade of experience, serving thousands of successful individuals and businesses. We use patented, award-winning systems to boost positive content and suppress negative material. Don't let the internet define you. Take control of your reputation today with ReputationDefender.com. For your quick, free reputation analysis, call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Most people think life insurance pays after you're dead. That's true. But did you know you can have tax-free access to your life insurance while you're still alive? You can use the life benefits of your life insurance to grow your money with certainty and guarantees. No stock market risk, no tax risk, and no penalties. Call Life Benefits if you'd like a free book about how this can be done. Call 702-660-7000. That's 702-660-7000.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Calvin Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center-cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready-to-eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready-to-eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
As we come to the tail end of this hour anyway for America Tonight, a real treat to hang out with one of the best in the game. That would be the game of ice hockey. Ken Danico was known by his nickname, Mr. Devil. He won 3 Stanley Cups with the Devils, and I'm going to reemphasize this again, so just hang out for this, but I thought it'd be interesting to bring you a little slice of my other world and the sports world as we kind of lighten the load and have a conversation with, like I said, one of the best all time. He had more than one nickname, trust me. Ken Danico joins us now. You can catch him in the booth, of course, on MSG doing the Devil's Color. He's a color analyst and does a great job at that, too, as well. Won 3 Stanley Cups with the team. Ken, thanks for spending some time with us.
My pleasure, and I show my softer, kinder, gentler side now. So I know I'm maybe nicknamed Mr. Devil, but I really am an angel at heart. Please.
I love that. Oh, that imagery in my mind now that you just planted there. That's so, so funny. Hey, so Ken, I got to ask you this right at the top, because to me this was one of the crazy things that happened in the off season. There's always rules that change in hockey, as you know. And now you've got this failed offside challenge that results in a 2-minute penalty against the team that asked for the review. Wow, we've seen that affect a couple of games. How do you think that's going?
I think it's worked out the way the National Hockey League and the general managers who decided on this, it intended to, as far as, you know, it speeds the game up. coaches were challenging far too often, in my opinion. And now you've got to make sure. You got to do your homework and make sure. You saw at times it could be used even as a timeout if your team's not playing that well. And if you lose, you lose. I know you lost your timeout at the end. But a lot bigger ramifications now with the two-minute mark. So I think it's worked out pretty effectively.
Yeah, and saying that, the whole idea of the speeding up the game, and of course, when your years with the Devils and talking about the trap and the kind of hockey that was played then, it seems like, you know, forever and ago when that happened. Is it because it's just different times, trying to get people more interested in the game, not to lose the younger people that are coming up? So do you think that's working?
Well, I think everybody thinks. I'm not so sure at times. The offense is obviously more exciting. I've loved the game, and obviously the speed, the physicality has gone down. With that, you lose some character players, and obviously the fighting part of it. We could banter that for days, and it was part of my game, part of the generation I was involved in. I have a lot of respect for certain heavyweights that had a real tough job to do for so many years. You never saw a fan get up for popcorn when there was a fight, I'll tell you that for sure. So at times I enjoyed it, but I understand because of protecting players at all costs. And I will add that the concussion factor, when we went through that bad time, the fights were probably 5% of the concussions, if less, if you document it. It was more to do with the elbows to the head, the sticks, things like that. And the NHL's done everything they can to protect players at all costs, which to me, I understand and certainly helps kids and youth hockey that it's grown tremendously. We've seen throughout, certainly the United States over the years. We know it's a religion in Canada where I grew up. Everybody loves hockey. If you didn't put on a pair of skates as soon as you were born, you didn't have a whole lot to do, but that's what we loved to do growing up. And now it's grown tremendously, even in southern states, non-traditional hockey markets. And I think as far as the protection for players in the National Hockey League, our role models in the National Hockey League, so many kids watch, but it's good. Everything they've implemented as far as protecting guys, as far as hits to the head. And yes, with that, they curb the fighting. A lot of that's legal ramifications, in my opinion, too. You gotta be careful because everybody looks back and always tries to blame it on this or that. And, you know, for me, it was a little different. I was old school, and I believed I knew what I was getting into back then. It was a physical game. It was all part of it. And we've transitioned, and I enjoy the new speed, skill sets, levels, the skill level these guys have nowadays for sure. But I will add, and I say it all the time, everybody talks about a trap. It was just that our team was so damn good. That's it. We led the league in goals almost every Stanley Cup year. So we had plenty of offense. It wasn't our team. It wasn't like we sat back. We led the league in 2000 in goals for. 2001, we were second. So we could do it all, but I have to always preface that because people never do their homework. No. The Los Angeles Kings, I might add, but nobody says anything. In 2012, we're 30th in the National Hockey League goals. I never heard once about the Los Angeles Kings defense and their goaltending. So that's just the way it goes, and you got to follow it from that standpoint. Is people believe what they want to believe, but yes, the offense is great, and the Devils, my team, in fact, are a much better skilled offensive team, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So lost a couple, but New Jersey in the East, in the Metropolitan, hey, on top, 19-11-5 with the games played, 11-5. So looking and predicting and looking down the future, because it's still so early in the season, as I mentioned, we're not too far out of the gate, the 11-5 record. What do you see that's working so well besides that with New Jersey?
Well, I think, look, and again, still early. I know we're almost at the quarter point. All the Devils were looking to do was improve, be better. Last year, even Coach Hines had talked about it right in the training camp, a new mindset as far as they needed better players. They know that. And Ray Shiro, the general manager, has done an excellent job of bringing in the young guys. But these young guys have had an impact. You could never anticipate they're going to have the impact that they would have. And having said that, it was being a harder team to play against. They wanted to change the mindset, the culture. I think every team's going to tell you that hasn't had much success over the last few years. And they've got more success. They're going to go through their growing pains. They've, you know, lost a tough one in Toronto, played extremely well, didn't score. The goals will not always come, but certainly they have a much better higher skilled team that's able to make plays, and it's been a lot of fun. And yes, goals are important. They're near, I think, top five in goals for in the National Hockey League. They lost the other night to Winnipeg playing a good game again. Again, it was just a 5-minute span where they struggled. The Jets are a real high flying offensive club and take advantage of mistakes. That's kind of what happened, but they're going to go through growing pains. I don't know where it's going to end. By season's end, the Metropolitan is such a tough division. I think top to bottom, the teams are separated by 6 or 7 points. So you win 3 in a row, you're right in the mix. You lose 3 in a row, and you can drop awfully quickly. You can't have those sustained losing streaks. But the Devils are improved, and that's all they were looking to do. And we'll see where it ends and lands by the end of the season, if they can be a serious playoff contender or not.
Yeah. Can you mention it? Obviously, growing up in Canada, you made the joke, and you're right. What else is there to do? And everybody just loves hockey and skating. Do you still skate?
Still playing charity alumni games every once in a while. Yeah, I love it. We're moving a lot slower for sure, but when we get the opportunity, I travel with the team and have a player schedule, so I don't have a ton of time to do it. But love to get out with the kids every once in a while, because I've been in Jersey for 30-plus years and have a lot of friends that their kids play, whether it's the high schools, whether it's minor hockey. And anytime I can get out there and lend a hand every once in a while, it's always fun to get out there and, like I said, play these games. But my heart always has the same mentality as when I was 25, so I think I can do everything I did back then. But the legs and the cardio doesn't let me do everything I want to do out there. But it's always a blast to get back on the ice every once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can tell you love what you do. Last question, Ken. For you, when you were growing up, did you think you would have the career you had and the life that you're living?
I don't think anybody would expect that. I mean, I've said it many times in the documentary. I mean, when I was 7 years old, told my mother 50 times a day, I'm going to play in the National Hockey League. And my mother knew there was a small percentage that make it and pacified me and said, yeah, Kenny. But I don't know if she really believed it. And when I played my first game when I was 19 years old in Madison Square Garden in New York, so that was quite the thrill. And my mother's passed since then, a little lady of 5'1". Came to New York, she didn't really care much for the big cities and stuff, and she said, I don't care if he ever plays another game. If he didn't tell me 100 times a day, 100 times a day he was going to play, it just made it that much more gratifying for her to see that. And to play 1,200-plus and win Stanley Cups and all those things, that's your other dream, is to win a Stanley Cup. We would carry it over a garbage can over our head as kids, pretending it was a Stanley Cup when we were playing road hockey, and I'm sure a lot of other kids do the same thing. So I was very fortunate, played in a great organization, never had to go play anywhere else. But no, I was pretty happy just to get my opportunity to play as long as I did. Felt very fortunate, and I was a guy that just worked hard. I wasn't the most skilled, but I brought an element the team needed, and to play 20 years and all the games I did, I feel very grateful and played with a lot of great teammates and winning cups, which was what it was all about. So certainly been the Devils organization has been like family to me. Given me a lot, and the game of hockey has as well.
I love it. Ken Danico, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
Wow, what an hour. Thanks to all of you for listening to the show. Remember, you can always reach out to me, americatonight.net. Click on contact, and bada bing, you're in just like that.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX, or my website, danpilla.com.
This just in. Before your doctor gives you another antibiotic prescription that you don't want, get this free report, The Miracle of Garlic, Your First Home Medicine. This free report is filled with easy kitchen remedies for common colds, flus, sore throats, ear infections, and more. Plus, learn to boost your immunity before you get sick. Go now to GCNwellness.com. Just like it sounds, GCNwellness.com to get your free report, The Miracle of Garlic. Click GCNwellness.com.